Hello, everyone. This is The Takeaway. I'm Amy Walter. And we start today, where else, with Russia.
I'm not surprised we're starting with Russia.
Dan Coats gets it. The director of national intelligence spoke late this week with Andrea Mitchell at the Aspen Security Forum, which is pretty much Coachella for national security types. The conversation centered around the aftermath of Helsinki. After a week when President Trump sided with Russian Vladimir Putin over his own intelligence agencies, then walked it back, then walked back his own walk back, the American people are left wondering if the president truly believes his intelligence, that Russia interfered in the election, and if he does, why not say it? And if he doesn't, why not? And with another election coming up, Dan Coats, the DNI director, has been unequivocal.
It's undeniable that the Russians are taking the lead on this. We need to call them out on that.
He also expressed concern that Trump met with Putin one-on-one, and then Andrea Mitchell delivered some breaking news.
The White House has announced on Twitter that Vladimir Putin is coming to the White House in the fall.
Say that again? Okay.
Yeah.
That's going to be special.
As an intelligence officer, Coates says it's not his job to get political. His job is to assess the intelligence, communicate that to the president, and when necessary, to signal the alarms. And this, he says, is one of those times.
It was in the months prior to September 2001 when, according to then CIA Director George Tenet, the system was blinking red. And here we are nearly two decades later, and I'm here to say the warning lights are blinking red again.
The warning lights are blinking red. With us now is Michael Hayden, director of the NSA between 1999 and 2005, director of the CIA between 2006 and 2009, and now the principal of the Chertoff Group. And Chris Painter is the U.S.'s former top cyber diplomat, and he's currently the head of the Global Commission on the Stability of Cyberspace.
We've had this major event, this huge event, where there was an attack on the very foundation of our democracy. If there's no consequences for those bad actions, if there's nothing that actually serves to deter them, it becomes costless for them to do it again. And there's no reason for Putin not to do this again because there's been no cost that he's paid. And we haven't been good at imposing any either timely or credible costs on Putin or any threat of them in the future. And that's, I think, a real problem. And I think no matter how good the rest of the administration is, no matter how good people are at imposing sanctions or taking actions, if the precedent is not firm, if the president is not consistent in messaging saying this is unacceptable, that's a huge problem because it undercuts it. And we don't even have a declaratory statement. We don't even have a statement from the president saying this is impermissible, do it again, and we're going to take action. That's not even there. I mean, that's a foundation that you need to have.
So you do think that's important because what Republicans in Congress say is, look, we're doing our job as the check here. We have imposed sanctions. We're even talking about another bill to impose more sanctions should they meddle. But what you're saying is Congress can do all they want, but if the president doesn't back that up, then it's not really a serious deterrent?
Yeah, it's great that they're doing that. It's great that even the administration has imposed some sanctions. But put yourself in Putin's shoes, if you will, for a moment. If you're looking at this and you say, okay, there have been some sanctions, not that bad, really. I can deal with those. You know, I've been invited by Trump back to the G8, for instance. That really undercuts all those messages. And again, doesn't have the forceful approach that you need.
General Hayden, the DNI director, Dan Coats, talked about this blinking red light when it comes to cybersecurity. What does that mean to you when the DNI director says this is a blinking red light?
Well, I very much appreciate that Director Coats is going out there and laying some things clearly out for the American people and pretty much doing it as an independent, and I mean that in a very positive way for the administration. I think Director Coats was trying to make sure everyone understood that he and the intelligence community took very seriously the broader cyber threat. But then again, he did hone in on what the Russians were doing and the potential for election interference and so on. So absent what Chris correctly points out, absent presidential messaging on this, he went out there and put a clear marker down. And I was struck at Aspen when I asked, why did he on Monday then issue a statement about Russian interference. He said to correct the public record, which is a remarkable thing for someone within an administration to say. And Amy, can I add one thing to what Chris said earlier? In addition to the very important strategic concerns he laid out with regard to consistent messaging, there's an operational problem here. What happened with regard to the Russians in 2016, I've taken to describe as kind of an unexpected danger against a previously unappreciated weakness. In effect, it hit a seam between federal and local policy and politics, intelligence and law enforcement, and so on. And the lesson from that, a little bit like 9/11, and believe me, I know all the differences, but you have got to go extraordinary to respond, because ordinary didn't work. And we only go extraordinary structures, law, policy, resources, people, when the president directs that. And what we've got now is everyone really trying hard, but Amy, they're playing position, and they were playing position in 2016, and that won't work.
Yeah, I can say, you know, as part of the cyber community then in the government and even afterwards in the beginning of the Trump administration, this is not a threat we saw coming. We were focused on the traditional fear of an attack on critical infrastructure that could take out lights or power or financial systems. We're worried about theft of intellectual property. But for whatever reason, because this is not just a cyber issue, this is an influence operation.
Right, right.
The cyber folks just weren't focused on this as a major threat. And it really goes to what Mike said. This is in between the themes, that you really need to have a concerted approach. It's not just cyber people, but really almost a task force to look at this. And I still really haven't seen that set up. I was happy to see Rod Rosenstein announce this idea that Justice is going to start, or the FBI is going to start, contacting victims when they see evidence of nation state subversion of democratic processes. That's great, but that's only one step. We don't have that coordinated approach. We don't have a coordinated approach from the White House, from the National Security Council. There's no one who's really tasked to do this yet.
So how much of the issue for both of you, how much of this is political? I mean, we saw in 2016 the White House, then President Obama's White House, struggling with how do we talk about this in a way that's not going to look like I'm tipping the election for one or the other? Should we have been harder? Should we have been softer? Obviously, President Trump said this is Obama's fault. He knew about it and didn't do anything about it. So is this about political will, or is this really about putting the structures in place within the government to make sure this doesn't happen again?
I think it's both. I certainly don't think that in the Obama administration enough was done. I think it was treated too much of a political issue because they didn't want to affect the election. I can understand that, but you shouldn't ever let politics come into this. They should have taken action because this is such a threat to our democracy. It should have been, a lot of the actions that were taken in December should have been done almost right away. You know, I used to say that cyber, for the many years I've done it, and I'm sure Mike will agree, was not really a political issue. It was really a bipartisan issue, and largely I think it still is, but this has colored it in a political way, which I think is really unhelpful. We should try to divorce this, and it's very difficult, from the political concerns, because they're attacking our democracy. It could be one side today, it could be another side tomorrow, and structures are important to be sure, but we also have to have the political will, not just in terms of election interference, but really in cyber across the board, and I just don't think senior decision makers completely get cyber yet or understand the threat.
And Chris, I want to ask you specifically about that topic of cyber, which is, we, at least I hear it, you hear about cyber attacks and you think, okay, this is about going in and hacking our voter database or changing the results of an election. But what's more dangerous, that kind of hacking or just going on the internet and spreading false information and having bots tweet things out, which isn't really hacking, but it's the influence and the ability to divide and sow discord. Is that more dangerous than the possibility of the Russians coming in and going into a Secretary of State's office and messing with voter files?
Look, I think both of them are very dangerous. And I think you also have other cyber threats too that we have been worried about, like attacks on infrastructure that will have a more catastrophic effect. So I think they're both of great concern. The kind of influence operation, the trying to get people to change their minds, that really isn't a pure cyber thing. And that's why you need a more holistic approach to deal with it. And indeed, one of the problems we have now is people drink their news through straws. They all are in their own camps. They look at just the things that they know and reinforces them. And it's really too easy to influence people. Influence operations, Mike can speak better to this than I, have been around forever and ever. However, you know, this has allowed people to do it at scale and target in a way that we haven't seen before. And that really requires a different approach than just the pure cyber approach.
Yeah, Amy, Chris brings up a really interesting thing from my own personal history. More than 20 years ago, I first encountered this whole cyber question when I took command of a big Air Force unit in Texas. And we were on kind of on the cutting edge thinking about things cyber when it comes to the armed forces. Cyber's a domain. We're going to operate in the domain and so on. And we had a deep theological discussion that looked like a Jesuits at a medieval university or something as to whether we were in the cyber winning business or the information winning business, with cyber kind of being a subset of information, which was influence operations and deceptions and all the things that Chris has suggested. And we actually looked at that long and hard, and we finally decided, number one, cyber was tough enough, and number two, that information thing in American political culture quickly began to pull in amendments to the U.S. Constitution, like the First and the Fourth and so on. And so we stayed with cyber dominance, and that's why we now have a cyber command, not an information command. The Russians went to door number two. The Russians went to the information dominance lane, and now we're having trouble dealing with it because doctrinally, we have not thought about this in that way.
What do you think's going on within the intelligence community? How do you think they're feeling about this, sort of the rank and file, as they're watching the president and members of the intelligence community publicly disagree on how to handle this?
Look, I've tried to write about this a lot, and I've tried to be very fair. We have a president who is very comfortable with his own intuition, with his own instinct. And Amy, I just have to say that very often it appears to me that the departure point for the president's actions or the president's words, the departure point is not an agreed upon view of objective reality, but of something different. That is the fundamental, almost existential issue between a president who functions in one way and an intelligence community that's designed to do something quite different.
I think you also, when you couple that with a lack of preparation, it also creates other issues. So when President Putin offered this idea of using our mutual legal assistance treaty to perhaps have Mueller come over and interview those people, which would have been really a stage show, but then to link it with interviewing our ambassador, Mike McFaul, was just something that everyone should have known is a complete non-starter from the beginning. And anyone from the law enforcement community or the national security community could have said that right off. But to call it a remarkable offer, really, I think, and then have 3 days pass before it was completely rejected, I think just shows it's also lack of understanding and preparation coupled with what Mike said.
Chris Painter, General Michael Hayden, thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chris Painter is the U.S.'s former top cyber diplomat, and he's currently the head of the Global Commission on the Stability of Cyberspace. And Michael Hayden was the director of the NSA between 1999 and 2005, and director of the CIA between 2006 and 2009. He is now principal of the Chertoff Group.